Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy. People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoops. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will, the ill executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil P, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hampton.
RSG fam is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby. I want winners.
You guys act like it. Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Anybody can be peace.
Don't get no more realer. Oh, man. I love that intro, man. I laugh every time I hear it, man, especially at the end. Yeah, some good stuff in there, man. Particularly the John L. Smith clip where he's like, you know, get your chin up. Smile. Smile. Have you seen that press conference?
Yeah. It's a quiet kept secret.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, you're listening to The Real Sports Guys. We'd like to welcome you to the show tonight. RSG Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. We got a lot in store for you. But before, you know, we jump the gun, allow me to introduce the illustrious three-man booth. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer. With me, as always, on a go team. All right, we get down. I got to my right, my man D. Wills. Holler at the people.
What's up, fellas? I'm feeling good. You know, I'm there's so much happening right now, and you know, it's official. You know, Lakers season's over. We'll touch on that. You know, it's pretty much a wrap. You know, as a Pittsburgh fan, I'm loving
out.
That.
It's
breaking news. It's over. That's it. As Stephen A. would say, it's an abomination.
It's an abomination.
Oh, I love it. Welcome. The band is back.
But hey, man, hey.
They are who we thought they were.
At least who I thought they were. yes, we are back, man. We are back. The band is back together, and we're going to bring it, man. I got all my rowdy friends out here, all my rowdy friends, including my man, PhD. PhD, what's happening, Captain?
Happy to be here. I'm comfortable. I'm here in the studio chair. Got a new, brand new chair for the studio.
Nice.
It's feeling comfortable, like those slippers you get on Christmas morning. The one you get on Christmas morning that just slide on real comfortable. That's how I'm doing. And as always, I'm present.
As always, you got the alpaca rug. You got to get your alpaca rug.
Right.
You got to block that.
Right.
Yeah, you got to block those.
You block that. Alpaca. Oh, man.
So if you can't tell, we miss each other's company, so we're going to have a good time tonight. So sit back, relax. We're going to jump right into the intro to let you know when we give you a rundown of what we have in store for you tonight. We're going to hit you off early in this episode with the funky editorial. This is the Keep It Real edition. All right, we're going to get into Lance Armstrong's Oprah interview and talk about Manti Te'o getting catfished. Crazy. Just craziness. So we're going to get into that as well. We also going to talk some NFL. Super Bowl is set. The Harbaugh Bowl. We're going to get into how both the 49ers and the Ravens got there. And we're going to talk all things NFL for a little bit. Talk about the Tim Brown situation. Him calling out his head coach, Bill Callahan, during the Super Bowl, saying he threw the game. And then numerous other Raiders coming on and agreeing with him and disagreeing with him. Just a crazy situation. We're going to touch on that a little bit. Then we're going to hit you with the five on the black hand side. NBA All-Star Edition. We're going to talk about NBA All-Stars, the All-Star Game, kind of give you a little synopsis of this halfway point. That'll transition us into This Week in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, also known as the NBA. This is where we give you our NBA talk. We're going to get into the Lakers, Seattle getting the team back, Greg Oden coming back. What? Hey, email your GM, man. Email your local GM, tell him to kick the tires on Greg Oden. All right, he's coming back.
Can't wait.
Well played. And then we're going to talk about the Clippers and James Harden because I got some bets to play, right? So, yes, I'm going to be bragging. Then we're going to talk about some NCAA hoops, and that should close out the show, you know. So let's go on ahead and get into this. All right, fellas, y'all ready? Let's roll.
Fellas, one thing we need to say. Yes. Shall we say it, y'all? Yes. Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes.
Coleman, Ryan,
say it.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
We want to rock. Give us the rock. Ow.
All right. This is the Keep It Real edition of the Funky Editorial. We're going to get into a couple of things in particular. We're going to talk about this whole Lance Armstrong going on Oprah. Now, we all know Lance Armstrong messed up. He was roiding, doping, whatever you want to call it. But all cyclists dope. The key thing is he lied about it. He lied about it for a long time. He really lied about it. Like, he sued people who was calling him out on his line. He's kind of messed up.
Yeah, that's
taking your lie to a different level. That's taking your lie to a different level now.
Yeah.
When you suing people that's actually telling the truth, you kind of taking it a little too far. But he did a lot of damage. He also did a lot of good. But when you've done as much damage as he has, there's really only one way to make it right. Now, my mama told me a long time ago, you do something that bad, real bad, the only way to solve that is going Oprah. The only way to make that right is going Oprah, sit down on the couch, and tell Oprah why you did what you did and why you ain't going to do it no more. And that's what Lance Armstrong did. Now, everybody else, national media has had a chance to talk about this story. And now it's the Renegades' time. So, first off, I want both my comrades in arms to tackle this particular question. Before any of the proof, I'm putting that in air quotes. Y'all can't see it, but I'm in the studio, in the home studio, putting that in air quotes. Any of the proof came out that Lance was doping. Where were you at on Lance Armstrong? You know, because around 2004, 2005, man, there were some people out there, white people, saying that he was the greatest athlete in the world at that time. Now, of course, I disagree, because that's just me. But where were you guys at on the myth of Lance Armstrong, PhD?
I believed him. I thought he was clean. At some point, I just got bored with the story. But I'm also the same cat that is holding out hope that Barry Bonds is innocent, okay? Full disclosure there. So I,
All right, man, Ty. All right, right. Man, Ty.
Now, for the listeners out there, I have met my wife. these two gentlemen stood up for me, so they can attest to that, okay? Just put that on out there. Yeah.
Real. Ride or die. You ride or dying with that one.
Right. Just full disclosure. I'm just losing Twitter and Facebook followers by the second here. But, yeah, man, you know, I like Lance. I like what he stood for, and honestly, call me gullible, call me whatever, but I look at how much good he's done in terms of raising money for cancer, man. You know, I think in 2013, you don't have to look far to be touched by cancer, whether it's a family member, a neighbor, a friend, whatever it is, and you look at the numbers, man, that foundation has raised for cancer. In some ways, you know, looking at cheating, I can kind of get past that considering the good he's done. Now, what makes me take pause is just the harm and the destruction that he's done by just ruthlessly going after people, like the Game Changer said, suing them when they were telling the truth, when they were trying to come clean. And, you know, lawsuits and media coverage and all that kind of stuff, that can ruin folks' lives, man. And so when I take that into account, I really have a hard time respecting the guy. You know, at the end of the day, he came out, he said and did the right thing. Who cares why he said and did it? But he did come clean. He apologized. And at this point, you know, I think you should judge him moving forward. But for me, you know, I think about all the good he's done on one hand. On the other hand, I think about just how he's destroyed people's lives in terms of friends and teammates that he had that, you know, he just destroyed them going after him.
Yeah, it's a very complex issue. You know what I mean? Like, you know, people want to say, oh, is he a good guy, is he a bad guy? I think that's too simplistic. As you said, he did a lot of good, and it's a very nuanced and there's many layers to who he is as a person. I think you're right on in acknowledging the fact that he did a ton of good things for cancer research. But then on the other hand, he really went after some people. He went hard on some people. So, you know, I think, and as you said, I think a lot of people had some questions about the sincerity of the apology. I could care less about whether he was sincere
That's
or
right.
not. He was apologizing.
That's
yeah,
right.
He was apologizing.
I had a huge problem as well. Rick Riley is somebody who comes to mind. He didn't look contrite enough. You know, he looked like he was clipping his fingernails. He was, you know, come on now, man.
Yeah, you know who Rick Riley sounded like to me, man?
A jealous girl.
Remember when LeBron left Cleveland?
Snyder.
No, not even Snyder. Remember when Mo Williams tweeted how he was hurt and all that? Hey, what's a boyfriend?
Right.
Hey, come on, dog.
Yeah, Lance, you know, Lance needs to look at retribution, man. He needs to look at retribution for some of these folks that he really destroyed their lives, man, in terms of these lawsuits and so forth. I think it'd go a long way in a court of public opinion if he put some money in those folks' pockets.
Agree, because it was one of those situations, and I don't know, we've heard about, you know, I never have actually had this happen to me, but you've seen these people before. When they tell a lie so long, they actually start to believe it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't know if he got caught up in a situation like that where he actually started to believe, man, you're right, I wasn't doping. You know? So I don't know, man. But I agree. I think in the court of public opinion, he has some definite there's some reparations due for some folks out there from Lance Armstrong. D. Wills, where are you on the myth of Lance Armstrong?
Well, I've been listening, sitting back and listening to this, and it's a great discussion. Let me start with the first part. You know, what did I think about it? I believe he was doping, but the sport was doping. The sport is built on corruption. I didn't hold that against him. Okay. But there are a whole a bunch of other people, examples who did that. We mentioned, or allegedly, you know. But you think about people like Pete Rose. You think about Barry Bonds. You think about McGuire. You think about all these different players in different sports who have had accusations. But what separates Lance from them, and this is the sinister part about it, is the way in which what you guys have talked about is destroy folks to preserve the lie. You never heard of Pete Rose really going after that. And those kind of stories haven't come out about Rose or Bonds or anybody about, you know, doing those kind of things. They may happen, but the stuff around with the way in which he put his team together and the success of Livestrong is built on the lie. It's built on the part that is sinister. And this almost this kind of hero worship. Now, out of a lot of crazy things, we've all had our stuff in our life, something beautiful happened. Like the rise of the phoenix, right, from the ashes. Something great happened. You heard Stuart Scott and other people who, I talk to people all the time. You know, in Madison, it's a big biking community. And then people who bike wear the Livestrong bracelet. The first time I saw it was for people, colleagues I work with who were bikers and carrying the message. But the way in which he's calculated, and he's always been kind of arrogant around it and somewhat sinister, is what bothered me. Doping in a sport, I mean, cycling, like I say about baseball, this kind of arrogance around what is, really the essence of the game. He couldn't have done what he did without somebody within some of those large agencies. Somebody somewhere supported him. He could not have done it the way he did it for so long without there being corruption throughout the cycling world in high places. And nobody's ever going to tell me any different. So the corruption around that, you know, I always used to watch the Tour de France and stuff like that, but we all knew it was dope. So that wasn't a part, but the way in which he destroyed people and the way in which the lie was built, that ultimately ended up doing good, but it's who he is at his core. And I think part of that came out in the interview. You know, and I don't really care if he's contrite or not, but because that's on him. That's between him and whatever spiritual place he got to go with. But the idea that you can be that sinister says a lot about it. This is a cat who wanted to run for office. You know, he's well connected in the political world in Texas. You know, so there's a lot of things going on here. And then the other part of the story that was just straight up ruthless, and I'll leave it at this, is when he came out of, you know, in terms of getting in more remission with his cancer. This is one thing when one of the guys was on the air talking about it, how quickly he left his wife and then he got connected to another celebrity and got, you know, after she walked him through the whole recovery. All that, when you start to put it together, is crazy.
Yeah.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Oprah asked him if he was a bully. Are you a bully, Lance? Yes. Yes, I am.
Again, you got to come clean, man. When you're Oprah put something that people drink, man. Excuse me.
They should put a little toothpick in their little coffee cup, man, because they get on there and they just be saying all types of stuff that they should be asking questions that they ain't even on there for. You ain't even in trouble for that.
Obama got Oprah all up in Gitmo, you know, working with his surgeon. They just, yes, I did. They gave up Osama, put Oprah in front of them. It's like, I did. Yeah, look at that warm stuff. They fell into a trance. Yeah, people give it up on Oprah. And she just sit back and look at it. Cats go into get mode, man.
They go into a little room, the light be off. They turn the lights on, them cats sitting on the couch. They pull a bag off their head. Them cats begging to be waterboarded. No, not Oprah.
Not Oprah.
In a big boat. I tell you whatever you want to know, man. I tell you whatever you want to know. Just don't have Oprah come in here. Cats like, waterboard me, please. Waterboard me.
I got to give it to Oprah, though. She started off the interview very strong. She asked all the questions that we wanted to know, and she only wanted to give a yes. I mean, yes or no, okay? You got that? You got it? All right. So I do have to say that she went at it pretty strong from the get-go. I got to be honest, I didn't watch day two. You know, I got everything I got out of it in day one.
Yep, I agree. I didn't check for day two. And where I stood on the whole Lance thing was I felt, and this was just me being me, I'm kind of contrarian. You know, JP, Justin Page, our NBA expert, he calls himself a contrarian. I think he's way more of a contrarian than I am because he just go out there sometimes. But I do consider myself to be a contrarian a lot of times and just like to go the other way, just to go the other way. With the whole Lance Armstrong situation, I went the other way, but I didn't go the other way just to go the other way. I felt like I was using common sense. Now, a lot of people, I didn't have no proof, but common sense. The Tour de France is a very grueling physical endeavor, which is why a lot of people don't just do that. All right, that's something that's really hard on your body. It's hard on your physiological systems. It takes a toll on you. And for someone to come back from cancer and be able to dominate their sport the way he was dominated, you had to have some sort of help. Now, I wouldn't have gone as far as to say he doped in all of them, but I would have said that first one he had some help because you just don't come back from cancer and win the Tour de France. You know what I'm saying? Cancer is something that zaps your body. It takes, you talk about how much of a toll the Tour de France takes on your body. Cancer is that tenfold. And anyone that has been touched by cancer knows that it takes a tremendous toll on someone's body to go through chemo, to go through the therapy, and then to be able to beat it and then recover. Just to recover and be able to do some of the stuff you used to do is a tremendous feat. Let alone to be able to push your body to some of the most extreme limits that you can push a human body, period, is unbelievable. And honestly, if he had to come out and said, I doped for the first one and the second one, I'd have been like, I understand. Like, you were coming back from cancer. If there was ever a time to get some HGH or something in your system to help you recover quicker, and to help you build muscle, that'd have been the time. And I'd give him a pass on that. Like, yo, you come back from cancer, I feel you. You know, if Cass is coming back from an injury, you know, they got a thigh contusion, and they decide to do a little Roy, and oh, okay, I see you had an injury or whatever, you're trying to recover, you old, whatever, I get it. Your body don't recover like you, so I'm in my 30s now. You know, I used to be able to hoop for 4 or 5 hours and do it again the next day. Man, if I do that now, I'm out for like 2 weeks.
Right.
So I understood. And I could relate to that. So I always felt that he was doing something. And then there's just the culture of that sport in general seems to be that there's always a cat getting caught with something. You know, and where that smoke, there's fire. So that was my thing. You know, I kind of saw it with baseball, and I kind of had that suspicion with baseball, but I never came out and said it because, you know, it was around that time where you had Sosa and those cats doing their thing. And, I'm a White Sox fan. I saw Sammy Sosa when he was with the White Sox when he came into the league. Dude was built like me. He was about 6'2", 6'3", 190, 200 pounds, about my size. He did to the Cubs, which I hate. Yes, I hate the Chicago Cubs. he goes over to the Cubs, and now he like 230, you know, hitting home runs. I knew Sammy Sosa was on something. I didn't call it that, but I knew that wasn't the same Sammy Sosa I had seen coming to the league. So for me, it was just another, like, you got me once with baseball. You're not going to get me on this one now. I'm
going
to use my
Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was clean.
Ride or die. Barry, we don't have any concrete proof that Barry Bonds was not clean. You're right. But I'm guessing Barry Bonds did the same thing that my man Sammy Sosa was on and Mark McGwire was on. Whatever it is, I'm guessing he was on it. So that's why I stood on Lance. I just kind of felt like he was always into something a little extra. And I didn't necessarily have a problem with him for it. I figured that was a part of the sport. That's what they do in cycling. Somebody's always getting caught for something.
And the bottom line is then when they tried to give the titles, the vacated titles to somebody, they couldn't because, like, the next three or four had been called for Toby. So you couldn't give a title away.
You got a cat that finished ninth. All of a sudden, you got a Tour de France.
You know what I'm saying? I might ride the Tour de France just to be the only clean cat. So when it do come up, the 231st finisher.
Hello. He rode the bike he just bought from Walmart, and he's
right.
On.
Right.
You know what?
Cat wakes
did
up
he
when
even
it
finish
the
race? Did he even finish? No, he didn't finish, but he was the only one who was clean.
Yeah.
Right, he started, okay?
You mean he stopped after 3 miles?
Oh, no. They
turned around and went home.
I know, they caught him dining in a little bar and drinking some beer and rolling in. We got pictures of him.
Right.
He stopped at the 10-mile point, had dinner and a glass of wine.
He was going up a hill, said, F this, I'm going down. I'm going back down the hill. This is easy. I'm just going to ride downhill. Race over. Oh, man. So, I don't know. You pointed it out, Phil. The outrage, the media reaction has been real interesting to me because these are a lot of the same folks that was touting this dude. And, you know, again, there was conversations in 2004, 2005 about him being the best athlete in the world. And to me, that was just ridiculous because at that time, you had cats like a young LeBron. You had like an 18, 19-year-old LeBron. You had Mike Vick at his peak. I mean, you had some really, really great athletes out there who were doing some amazing things. And people talking about a bike, a dude that ride a bike as the best athlete in the world. Just to sensationalize this dude and put him on that pedestal, that even made me more of a contrarian. Just like, nah, come on, man. Like, this dude, what? He rides a bike. He rides a bike. So to see those same people that propped him up and showered all his praise upon him to then turn around this past week and, like, spit on him. I mean, some of them were really heated. Like you pointed out, Rick Riley, you know, a lot of the ESPN cats were heated. A lot of folks were upset and mad. And it's like, shame on you. Shame on you because you fell for it. From all accounts, this dude was a jerk in person. You know, he did a lot of good through his organization. But as a person, it seems at least this past week, a lot of people presented him as like, yeah, he was pretty coarse. He was kind of a jerk. Well, y'all protected him. If y'all saw that, you know, it's the same reason they talk about Bonds. You know, people don't like it. The media doesn't like him, and so that's kind of why he got thrown under the bus. Well, Armstrong was kind of the same way, but they protected him. And I don't know if they protected him because of the work he was doing. Say what?
Were you a bully?
Yes. Exactly. You know what I mean? So this personality profile existed and it seemed to be common knowledge. But yet the media protected him. So for him to rail against him, for them to rail against him this week because he was coming out in the meeting, what a lot of people had been saying all along was just ridiculous to me. I don't know how you guys felt about that, but I just had enough of the media reaction to the whole situation over the weekend. Anytime somebody on the radio got to talking about the whole Lance Armstrong situation, once I heard what he said on Oprah, I was done with listening to it because it affirmed what I had already known. And I just didn't want to hear the reaction from folks in the media after a couple, and listening to a couple people, I was good on it. I don't know. How about you, D. Wills? How did you feel about the media reaction?
I'm going to tell you, and I just watched the highlights because I knew how the interview was going to go. He was, you know, especially if he once he got in the chair with Oprah, I knew it was over. But I agree. I think it was crazy. And even when Stuart Scott came out, who's still wearing his Livestrong band, just talked about, and he had that criticism and saying that if it wasn't him, he saved his life. I just think that, you know, that's part of what it is. People are going to overreact one way or another. And I think a lot of reaction was when people found out the way he treated people and he destroyed people. But the thing about it is, like you said, most of these people, particularly their roles in the media, knew what he did to people. And most of the people, if they really thought deep down inside, knew he probably was doping because everybody else was doping in the sport. So you had to conclude that he was railroading these people. I mean, Greg LeMond, he destroyed his business. You think about all these people, you know, who are, you know, you think about Greg LeMond or something like that. I mean, this, he was revered and destroyed him. So, I mean, you can't be on both sides of the issue. I think sometimes the pendulum swings to it is what it is, and other people have to judge him. But yeah, people just ran him out the way on that, and that's the way the media is going to work on a situation like that. But many of them knew, like we all knew. They just didn't want to, you know, they always run around with that yellow band on. And you got to figure out how to take it off that quick enough. You know, I never put the yellow band on.
Yeah, but it's more about the band. You know, the band represented something bigger than Lance Armstrong. And, you know, I think that's the point that Stuart Scott was making. You know.
But it's true, but it wouldn't have been bigger. The only thing that made it big was his story made it big.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get to how do you get the yellow band? Well, you don't get the yellow band unless you buy the story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a number of athletes who have battled illness and come back from things, and there's a number of public people who have battled this kind of stuff. But what made it work was the story. So to believe the story, that's what, and then he carried the message. So, and I'm not saying it's, you know, I started, the rise of the phoenix, right? You're out of the ashes, you know, some good can come out of it. So that part is, you know, sometimes you get the good in crazy ways. I agree with that. And I'm with Stuart on that. But the only reason it was able to happen was because of the lie. And I'm going to tell you right now, if this was Barry Bonds, people wouldn't be running that same thing. If this was
here's a $9.99 question.
He said a $9. We've just coined a new phrase, y'all. If y'all hear it anywhere else, other than RSP.
Hey, they gotta pay royalties.
That's right.
We coming out of like Big Red and Five Heartbeats, hanging them out a window.
He said a $9. All right, man.
Here's a $9.99 question for both of you all. For all the bad that Lance Armstrong did and, you know, the 5 to 10 lives that he has ruined through lying, lawsuits, friends that he's lied to, and let's say it's 5 to 10 individuals that have a strong claim, a strong case, that he is really, really, his lies have really influenced their life negatively. Is that worth all the lives that Livestrong has probably saved or increased the quality of?
I'll go first. I can compartmentalize his work. Again, I'm an adult. It's a nuanced question. There's no good or bad in this world. It's all about your perspective and where you stand on the situation. He did some bad stuff as a man. His organization can exist outside of him. His work, I think, is overblown to just say it was his work. That's like just saying Dr. King, you know, was a civil rights movement. Nah, there was a bunch of other people who did some great work, and regardless of what Dr. King did or was, the work of those people is still positive work. And they may have had some foibles and some warts and some things that they may not want to come to light. But the work that they did was still good work. And the work that he was the figurehead of, that was done more likely by other folks, whether he did the work or not, it's still good work. So, yes, you can do bad things with one hand and do good with another hand, and they both are, they are what they are. You know, what you did over here, destroying, you know, five or six people's lives and their livelihood is terrible, something that you shouldn't have done. What you did over here is a good thing. Both have value. Both you have to take responsibility for. You know, you have to take the blame for the things that you did wrong. You take the credit for the stuff that you did good. In the end, you'll be judged accordingly. You know, you put it all on a scale and see how it balances. If I were to say what that balance would look like, I would say he's probably done as much good, but I would say the bad that he's done has been, it hasn't been, like, you can be humbly bad, if that makes sense. Like, you can be a humble bad guy. Like, you're doing stuff and you know you shouldn't be doing it, and so you're, like, trying to sneak and do it and hide it because you know you shouldn't be doing it. And then there's just, like, an outright, you know what, I don't care. And I'm you know I was doping, and I know I was doping, but I'm going to sue you because I was doping. That's a little different. So, man, I'm not answering this question at all.
Right. 7 minutes in. Yeah. Right. 7 minutes in.
The $9.99 question has become a $7.
Good outweigh the bad, man. I'm going to have to say,
Game changer just down to the 99-cent question.
I got 99 cents left. I don't even know what to say. I don't know, man. I can't even call it. I'm gonna be honest. I can't even call it, man. What I will say is that I can still. If I were somebody who supported, or if someone asked me to support Live Strong, I would still support Live Strong. Would I say I support Lance Armstrong? No. If Lance Armstrong was still affiliated with it, would I support Live Strong? I'd probably say no. Now that he's not affiliated with it and the work can stand on its own, I definitely support it. I definitely believe in what's being done there. I definitely believe in that kind of work. But I don't believe in Lance Armstrong. I don't know.
The way I approach it is your question assumes that you could not get this same outcome without destroying those people. And I would say that in some ways, he probably could have transitioned out of this much smoother and probably still been associated with Livestrong if he would have avoided tearing them down and really spun his come out in the way he wanted to spin it out. In a sense, and connected it in the way that Game Changer said, because obviously this was part of, early on, part of his illness and how he could really begin to manage that and get back on the tour. And if he could just tie it to that journey back, and he made some mistakes and being able to do that, then in some ways, he would have been, there would have been a reaction. I think it would have been more sympathetic. People would have understood it. And we are a nation of second chances. And I think they would have said, you know, the cause of Livestrong is still living, and I think he could still be a part of it. So the assumption is, could he have done it without destroying them? And I don't think he needed to destroy them to do it. I think if he had enough capacity to destroy them, then he had enough capacity to keep it moving without destroying them. And so given that, that's where I probably align with the Game Changers. That I think, you know, again, out of all kinds of craziness, good can come. I think Livestrong is doing what it needs to do, and I think one of the important things is that they needed to transition with another figure face in somebody who could continue it in a way that, and I think that's what's going to be important, is finding a celebrity or finding a face that can really keep that energy going in a way, and rebrand the message. But I'm assuming that he didn't necessarily have to destroy the lives to get the outcome he got.
Yeah, that's a tough question, man. $9.99 question brought to you by PhD. So I want to move us along as we continue this conversation. And we're going to talk about Manti Te'o.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable. And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
And I'm about to get some hot sauce for this catfish. Oh, something.
Hey, I'm telling you, man. When this story broke, I literally busted out laughing in my car, man. I cracked up laughing. I was like, what got me was the day, maybe 2 days before, I had just watched for the first time, I had just become familiar with the term catfish through the MTV television show. All right, the cable show on MTV, the television program, as old folks call it. I had just watched that episode and began to wrap my mind around this concept of getting catfished. And then, you know, the story about Manti Te'o comes out. And I just cracked up. I'm like, you know, me and PhD texted back and forth a little bit about this when this came out. And, you know, we had some pretty snide comments. But one of the observations I made was that I feel like something had to be up. You know, this was setting off all types of game changer alarms. My spidey sense was going off. This is just like, wait a minute, man. You are a Heisman Trophy candidate on a football crazed campus. The market must be pretty slim for Hawaiian brothers if you got to have an online girlfriend at Notre Dame. I mean, like, what's really going on out there? Is that something you need to call the NAACP on? I mean, they're not giving them no play out there or what? Because, I mean, like, you're everywhere, and you got to have a girlfriend online? And then she turned out to be fake? You're either a true loser or you were in on it. That was my general reaction. That was my gut reaction to the news. PhD, when you first heard this story, what was your reaction?
Well, sitting having dinner with my wife, and all I could read was on the bottom line on ESPN. And I read it, and she looked at me like, what? This don't make no sense. And so it's a very odd situation. First of all, I'd like to say that I've heard the word elaborate hoax more the last week than I have in my entire life. Some part of an elaborate hoax.
You're right.
I mean, the term hoax has made a comeback. Okay.
Right, right.
It has made.
Right. I haven't thought about tomfoolery yet. I was hashtagging it.
Right.
Manti hoax. That was my hashtag.
The term hoax has made a big time comeback. But it's just a very odd situation. And in some ways, you know, I'm not sure when you listen to this, and I just did talk to you, the listener, in first person, but I'm not sure when you're going to be listening to this podcast, but this Thursday, Manti is going to be sitting down on the couch with Katie Couric, I understand. And in some ways, it seems like the life cycle of the story has already ran its course. And now we're going to do an interview a week later. So I don't quite get it. It seems like from a, you know, because from Manti's standpoint, it's very important for him to come out of this as clean as possible because his draft status, his draft stock is very, very much going to be impacted based on a public opinion.
You think so?
I think if he doesn't handle this well, it can be. So going into, like, prior to this situation, it was pretty clear that he was going to be a top 10 to 15 pick. And that's probably a conservative estimate. Now, with all this drama, folks are still predicting that he's going to go in the first round, but now it's kind of more up in the air. So, I mean, there's still a lot of other cards to fall in terms of how he performs at the combine physically as well as background check.
If he runs a 4.5, he's going to get drafted. He's going to get drafted high. They take cats that have done worse. I think where the hoax
I think where the Hawks hurts him is in his marketability after he gets drafted. Wherever he goes, is someone going to want to put him in a commercial the way they would put Tim Tebow or Peyton Manning in a commercial? I think his independent marketability takes a hit. But as far as his draft stock, they drafted him to play football. And unless his imaginary girlfriend is going to stop him from playing football, well, I don't think they care.
Well, here's the question. You know, I'm not wishing this on the young man, but what if another shoe drops that, you know, in true Tiger Woods fashion, young ladies are coming out of the woodwork, you know, saying that I had a relationship with Manti during this time. You know, I mean, I just think there's so much more to the story that can potentially come out.
I agree with you. I think there's more to the story, too. In the end, though, I still don't think it affects his draft stock because, again, I think teams more – if he comes out and, again, if he performs well at the combine, he's got good tape, I don't think they're going to care. I think the thing that he may drop three or four picks. I don't think he falls out of the first round because, again, I don't think NFL executives care that much. They've taken cats with drinking problems. They take cats with arrest charges.
No. He looked pretty bad in that national championship game. What was it, 7 missed tackles? I mean, next week it's going to be 12 missed tackles. I mean, he looked pretty bad, man.
And he did.
But I think the story helps to explain that a little bit. Because if anybody who watched that game, I've been saying he looked like Mike Tyson when he was sitting on the couch with Robert Gibbons during that interview.
Nah, he looked like somebody killed his imaginary girlfriend.
Yeah, that was it. I mean, if you look at the way, that was it.
Marcus, no! No! What was the sponsor say? Come on, man.
Oh, my goodness.
RealSportsGuys.com.
Oh, man.
You got it.
We have reached the band hasn't been back together that long. We are in rare form. This is definitely going to be a classic. But I don't think it's going to hurt. He's a defensive player. I think we have a short cycle. He has a great agency around him. Part of the interview that he's having now is really about not about this situation. It's about situating him for his sponsorships and moving forward. And just think about it. I mean, Ray Lewis, who we are revering over these next 2 weeks, had a real tough situation early in his career. And, you know, even though people still try to bring that stuff up now, his brand is much different now than it was then. And so, when his girlfriend allegedly died, on the same day as grandmother, I was like, that's interesting. I was like, you either got to be the most unlucky person in the world, or that was interesting. But I didn't think much of it. Didn't really pay attention to it that much to really think about.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you guys for a second. $9.99 question. All right, RSG exclusive. $9.99 question. Was he in on it? Is Manti Te'o in on the hoax?
No, I don't think he was in on it. What I think happened was when he was trying to, when he found out she died, like anybody, you're going to try and figure out how to get there. I think it unraveled at that point. And then I think that's where it started to unfold. He got verified about it. And then, you know, as he moved towards the championship game, you know, they began to decide to tell the team. But I think that, you know, I think at some point in there he found something out because things started unraveling for him. And I think he just kind of figured it out. And then you figure out what's going on in terms of not really the lie, but like, damn, I've been duped. So,
yeah.
I think that part is what would probably unravel. And then he had to figure out, you know, what do I do from here? That's my thoughts.
PhD, was he in on it?
Was he in on it? Well, let me say this first. The recorded interview with Jeremy Schapp, when Jeremy Schapp was reading it line by line, narrating it, was horrible. That was horrific. When he was reading it, I said to myself, this is poorly put together. What do you mean? You mean this? Yes. I was like, what is this? Mankind made the pictures. But no video. What is this?
Was that after the Lance Armstrong thing?
Yeah, I think it was.
So he has one of the largest agencies working with him. He has experts working with him. And what people reacted to Lance Armstrong was he contrite? What they did was they eliminated that. And the other thing, and I'll say, you know, Oprah's tough, but Jeremy Schapp also gets you some blizzy. When he said, because you know Jerry called you on the record.
Right. What do you mean it was a hoax? I didn't know what was going on. You mean you didn't know anything?
Jerry's just very prosecutorial on you.
I sat there, I listened to that, and I was just cracking up. What do you mean you didn't know anything? I didn't know nothing. You mean like you didn't understand anything about it? No.
Oh, man.
And so, Marcus, man, I'm just going to come out and say that he had to know something about it. You know, 3 years, you get stood up, something. And then a dad is saying that he met her, then he's saying that he didn't, then he's saying, I didn't tell dad because dad was going to shut it down. What do you mean shut it down? Said, you know, dad wasn't going to approve it. What do you mean not approve it? I just thought he was going to shut it down. Oh, okay. All right, I'm going to let it go.
Yeah. See, I'm with you. I think he knew something about it. To what extent he was in on it, as far as was he in on it from the beginning, or once he found out about it, was he unable to, like, get that cat back in the box, so to speak?
I'm not going to try and have her die on Grandma's death day. That part right there, I'm still trying to figure out. That right there don't fit right.
Hey, man, if you're going to do it, man, you might as well do it.
Do it all together. Maybe that's what you're saying.
If you're going to make up a scenario, man, you might as well go all out.
I don't know. Every semester I teach with these college kids, man, around finals or midterms, I get like 7 grandmothers who pass. I don't know.
Hey, man. Yeah, I went to school. Me and PLT went to school with a cat. I'm going to leave his name I'm not going to name him on the radio, but he made up some pretty outlandish rumors himself. Just said some crazy off-the-wall stuff to professors, man.
But this is the killer. So when the reporter did the interview and he went to check and there was no record of a death. So I don't know, man. But he gonna roll out.
I don't know, man. Like you don't. I don't know. I don't know what the courting process looks like in 2013. But I don't know, man. Y'all never go to a movie.
I'm gonna tell you right now, these kids, you know this, they will do everything online and at a distance.
Yeah.
But at some point you got to meet.
Exactly.
You can't do everything online.
Exactly.
Sleeping and snoring into the phone? I'm just trying to figure it all out. But every time I see young people, the things they do, you know, nobody wants to pick up the phone. Everybody wants to text. You tell them to call, they get mad at you.
Yeah, man. You tell a little kid to call, man, they act like you just asked them something crazy. What do you mean, call? I ain't going to call nobody. I got to talk then.
They're answering my text, Dad. You know, they on some other stuff, man.
Right.
I
don't even know if that's them.
Yeah, I got to look into your eyes. I got to look into your eyes. Make sure you don't boil no rabbits. You know, we got to see
exactly.
The relationship.
Exactly. I need to be able to look at your fingernails. I need to be able to look under your fingernails, young man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you eat real food? You know, then can you eat? Are you going?
Right.
We got to figure out the courtship thing. You know,
right.
That kind of stuff. You know,
don't shake my hand.
Comedy. Yeah, yeah. You know, we got to
shake my hand. Don't be LOL me.
Listen, we're talking about.
Get over here.
Not a game. We talking
about
practice.
And another thing for a guy.
Had to get you guys refocused.
See, you don't want to get two fathers going with two guys with teenage daughters going.
Yeah.
I had to get you guys refocused.
Before you know it, we're going to be just shooting guns in the back.
Yeah.
I wish somebody would call my house.
Yeah, just let it go. Just let it go, dude. Let's move on.
I'm going to let it go, man. We're going to move to the next one. It's a hot topic for all of us.
This whole thing, man, I agree with you, PhD. I went on another shooter drop. If I was Manta, I'd just shut up and let it go. With America's attention span, the Super Bowl is coming up, I would just lay low. Like, seriously, I would go to my cousin's crib and just hide under the bed for a little bit, man, and just wait till the heat's off. I wouldn't do no interviews with nobody. Because the next time you say something, I mean, the story is dead. The next time he said something, it'll be the next time people talk about it. So he should just shut up. That's how I feel about it, man. He should just let it ride.
The Candy Kirk thing is really about endorsements. It's about likability. It's about, you know, setting a brand for the next 6 months. That's what that is about. And that's what happens when you have a large agency. Kind of tough you do. But like you said, this is a story. I mean, this is a story that's dead now.
Yeah. So one of the reasons it's dead is because it's about to be Super Bowl Sunday in a couple of weeks. So right now, we're going to get into some NFL talk. You're listening to The Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio, brought to you by Resistance Digital. Make sure you hit up the fellas at Resistance Digital to get all your digital needs met at a very, very reasonable price. Now, we got in the Harbaugh Bowl. Now, you called this, D-Will. You called it. I think Phil T's under the hood right now checking the tape to make sure you called it fair and square. But you're claiming you called this one. Watching the games this past Sunday, first let's talk about the 49ers versus Atlanta. Atlanta, are they kind of like the 2013 version of the Houston Oilers, Philadelphia, Andy Reid, Philadelphia Eagles, the Warm Moon Houston Oilers, that team that is always good, always finds a way to be a one seed, but never quite gets over that hump. Are they that squad?
Curl just ain't, how you say it, Phil T?
Don't quite curl all the way.
You know, I watched that game. I mean, if you would have told me Julio Jones is going to play like a beast, White's going to play like a beast, Gonzalez is going to play like a beast, and you still lose? I mean, when I watched that game, I still couldn't figure out how they lost. Because
Kaepernick's a beast.
Because Kaepernick's a beast. And throwing, he's a beast. But are they? Yes, I think you're labeling them as that Houston Oilers, Philadelphia Eagles type of team. It's right, talented, but can't figure out how to get over the top. But with those teams, particularly with Philly, it was because they didn't really commit to a certain phase of the offense and running, the kind of things you got to do to make people respect you and not get off, you know, those kind of things that you always thought that was a weakness. When I watched them, you know, that was an issue. I think on the defensive side of the ball, their biggest problem is they don't have enough guys that feel like even in that front seven sometimes, that make enough plays behind them who just do it. And every time I see some of their players sitting on the sidelines doing something about their defense that could be much better that's not there. And I think as they look at doing work moving forward, they got to continue to improve on that defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, yeah. And overall, man, I just don't know. It's something about the way that they because I thought this was their year, man. I thought they had everything. They got the good balance on offense. They're finally flinging the ball around a little bit. They're not so dependent on Turner. They have enough of a running game where they can be physical and they can play that style of ball. But it's that thing, man. It's that thing that you just can't call. You can't put a name on it, that intangible thing that they don't have. Because I wouldn't say the 49ers was necessarily a better team. They were the better team that day.
Yeah.
The 49ers defense wasn't necessarily a head and shoulders better D than their D. 49ers offense is solid, but it wasn't, you know, amazing. I really believe that there's a mental block with that team. And I think Matt Ryan is kind of at that point where Peyton Manning was early in his career, where he kept knocking. And everybody was saying, well, he couldn't win the big one, couldn't beat Florida, couldn't beat Brady and Belichick, couldn't get over the hump in the playoffs. And it seems like Matt Ryan is kind of bumping his head against that door. I also think they need one more weapon on offense. You know, I think they have White, you got Jones. I think they could be a little bit more explosive out of their running game. I think Jaquizz Rodgers could could have incorporated him more. They just need something else. I don't know. It's an element that they're missing. You know, it's like the gumbo is good, but it just ain't. And like you said, the curl just ain't quite for me with Atlanta. It just ain't quite just turning over like it's supposed to.
And I'll say this, and I know Phil has been chomping at the bit to get on this, but I'll say, you know, in the beginning of the season when we were having a discussion, I was very critical of two quarterbacks, Ryan and Flacco. And I can't even blame this loss. I know you kind of frame it because Peyton Manning made plays in those games that contributed to the loss in the same way he just did in Denver. I think Ryan did it. Ryan did everything he was supposed to win this game. That's what made it so crazy. That in fact, I think Ryan's playoff run was great. And I think you're right, they needed something else. And they made a great play even, you know, when they hit Crabtree and he fumbled and they got back the goal line. I mean, at that moment I was like, okay, they're learning how to win, right? I was like, okay, that's a big play. And, you know, then they just couldn't capitalize on it. And so I don't know. This was a game, I don't know if it's as much as Atlanta lost, it was that the 49ers for some reason won. It was about a slight difference in execution. I mean, it came down to that. It's about all it came down to a slight difference in execution. That's about it. I mean, and so, but I don't even blame Ryan on this one. I mean, he made a couple bad plays. I would look at that he tossed away, but I felt like he did enough to help them win. Maybe I'm feeling wrong on that one, but I just felt like he did enough to help them win. And I can't believe I'm saying that.
PAZ, what did you think about the game?
Well, first of all, in response to your statement, Marcus, if Atlanta got any more weapons, they'd be looking like a Pro Bowl roster on offense. So I don't think weapons is an issue there. You know, they have two of the top five receivers in the game.
I'm like these gun control cats, man. You can't never have enough weapons.
That's right.
I'm like these pro gun cats, man.
When he said weapons, I was like, what else would I need?
I mean, I feel like they need something else, man. I don't know what it is, but I feel like they need something else. It seemed like everything was solid.
They need a rabbit's foot. That's what they need.
Yeah. So my second of 3 points is that they scored 24 points in the first half. They scored 0 points in the second half. You look at the statistics, you look at everything else, that's what hurt them the most, by far.
Man, that was like my weapons comment, Phil.
Nah, man. I mean, you scored two.
You
right.
Just said that I got outscored. That's why they lost.
I heard crickets on the line. I said, man.
The other team scored more points than they did, and that's why they lost,
No, I mean, you don't score any points in the second half. And so my last point is they had two untimely turnovers. They were moving the ball well. Ryan had a turn through the interception, but then I think what really, really hurt them was the bobbled shotgun snap that he lost, that fumble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those two mistakes were just so untimely because they were moving the ball well on those possessions. So I think when you put all that together, they didn't play well enough to win, and San Francisco did. You know, Atlanta's defense got them a turnover or two, but at the end of the day, you can't go a whole half of football without scoring a point. You just can't, even if you put up 24 in the first half. And the turnovers were untimely.
Yeah.
I think they need to keep that team together. And they will get over the hump.
Yeah, they can't panic. Yeah, two turnovers,
you think
one turnover.
So you think they're just a play or two away?
I do.
Okay.
Again, Barry Bonds
is
also clean.
I think what they need to do is they need to do what they did on offense, is they got to get a Julio Jones type steal on defense. Because what Abraham or whatever, I mean, he's not reliable, right? So
he's not.
So you got to. I think on defense, they got to get some young studs to go with it. They got to build some more depth. And too many times throughout the year, they didn't really dominate on line of scrimmage defensively. They play good team defense, but I don't know if they really have players who dominate like Smith on the 49ers. You know, the kind of guys that caused that kind of double team, kind of, it just doesn't feel like that. And I think that's an area where they could really do, because they make plays. Because part of the Ryan turnover is that if you look at the 49ers defense, they got nothing but ballers. The thing about the 49ers is when they hit people, it feels like you need to call the police.
Yeah.
It just hurt when you watch it. Like everybody, from the linebackers to the defensive backs, they hit folks like, that's got to be jail time on that hit. Like, somebody got to be watching it. They need to be walking him right out the stadium and right into the jail. The way he just acted. I don't feel that with Atlanta's defense. They play good, but I don't feel that, especially in the front seven.
Well, I agree with you, Devon, with their front four. I agree with you there. I think they can do some things. They could probably upgrade. But their linebacking core, I like Nichols. I like Weatherspoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're two of the better younger linebackers in the league. Their defensive backfield, they were making plays all year, creating turnovers, flying around. To me, they just need to get more pressure on the quarterback. And outside of that, I like that team. I hope they keep Smith together. I mean, you're in the Atlanta market, which obviously is growing and growing by the millisecond, and they demand winners down there, man. I don't know why, but they do demand winners. And I just hope they're pretty patient with this team. They give them some time.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they need to let them grow.
So Atlanta needs a little bit more seasoning, but the 49ers are nice and spiced and ready to go. What are their chances going up against the Baltimore Ravens team in the Super Bowl?
I'm not ready to make my official predictions. I figure we might do that next week.
Yeah, we're going to do that next week. But what do they need to hold down to have an opportunity to win this game?
What I would say is they got to convert on third down. And what people are missing about, I mean, we get a lot of stuff about this pistol and everything else, but what makes Kaepernick deadly is, do you see the balls he's throwing downfield? You know, in Washington, RG3 was throwing a lot of stuff behind the line of scrimmage, some shorter passes, some seam stuff. Not to say they're doing difficult throws, but when you look at Kaepernick, I mean, he is throwing deep outs, like over people and down. He's throwing, ends. I mean, he's throwing some tough passes, and that gives you pause. And I think if he can do that kind of stuff and move the chains, I think they need to do that. And then on defense, I think the key for them is they got to be able to control Rice. I think what you saw in the Patriots game is that, and what I like what Caldwell's doing, is they're really giving a heavy dose of Rice. If I think, I forget the stats, but I know when he has, over, 25, 27 carries, what the record is, those touches. But if he gets more touches, if they can figure out how to control that, and they have the linebackers and the folks to get out in space and do some of those things and to control the run. If they can do some of that, but I think moving the chains on third down, keeping Ray on the field, Ray has got to be able to chase down Kaepernick. And you can't really play man on him. But when he throws those passes, he forces man. So I think Kaepernick and those throws, loosening up the defense, and then being able to control Rice.
Wow, winning.
All right. PhD, your perceptions on the 49ers and what needs to happen. Actually, we're not even gonna follow that. D Wills broke that down nicely. Let's talk about the Ravens and the Patriots real quick. Now, this game was, I don't know, did Tom Brady look a little old to you in this game? Or maybe it was just a comparison, because we spent a lot of time watching guys like Aaron Rodgers, Kaepernick, RG3, even Andrew Luck, the guys who, when they get out of the pocket, they got some wheels on them. And it was a couple of times where Brady got out the pocket, man, and it was just like, when are you going to start running?
Yeah. First, the word decrepit. The word decrepit came to mind when he scrambled. And I don't know what he was doing. He was like a karate kick or a slide. And all I said to myself, man, if that was Adonikin Sue doing this, they'd already be on ESPN talking about this. But it's Brady, so I guess it's okay. New England.
Hey, Phil, I just want to say, I thought that was because he didn't know how to fall down. Like, he was trying to get down, and his feet went up in the air, and he kicked because he looked so awkward running. He just like the kid that you try to get out and pull out of the classroom, he just goes limp and just falls down and makes you drag him. That's what he looked like. So I think he just kind of stumbled into a slide and kicked him. I'll leave it at that. I'll go back to Bill. I digress.
Yeah, if I'm playing Pictionary, the words decrepit and awkward come to mind. Yeah.
So the Patriots, man, is the window. Can we close the window? Are y'all closing the window on this squad? Brady's 36.
You can't.
Belichick's up there. Wes Welker, he may be on his way out. I mean, what's next for this team?
I cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it.
You cannot close the door. You cannot close the door, because we will fall in love with Belichick and Brady in the offense come again next year when they rip off 5 out of 6. 8 out of 10 games. They're just so impressive offensively that they're always going to be in it if they can stay healthy. Now, I think the wild card here is Welker. They need to bring Welker back, because you can't find a guy who does what he does in just one guy. You know, you might be able to replace him by committee like Moneyball, but to get one guy that does what he does, you're going to have a hard time replacing that. I think that the New England that we saw was shorthanded. Let's keep that in mind. They were shorthanded without Gronkowski. And they also missed, they lost a couple of defensive backs as well. So when you put all that together, we did not see their full team out there. And so I don't think we can write off New England. The Ravens just played a better game. Flacco stepped up. Belichick's game plan, I think, was brilliant. He made them a passing team, and he said, Flacco's going to have to beat me. And in the past, Flacco has not consistently beat that team. He has not consistently played that well in the playoffs. So sometimes you call, you know, you call a dare, and they do it. And I think that's what happened with Baltimore. We saw Flacco grow up and make a lot of plays. Not just one or two plays, man. He made a lot of plays. The last point is Anquan Boldin looked like he was back in Arizona opposite Larry Fitzgerald. The ball went up, and he just said, give me that, multiple times.
Yeah.
So I think when you put all that together, man, the Ravens had the better ball team. Now, I'm not overly impressed with their defense. I think it was more Flacco on the offense that got it done on Sunday.
Okay. So we're going to hold off on picks till next week. I'm going to leave those conversations at that. Now, there are a couple other things I want to touch on before we finish up our NFL conversation
game trader, I throw something here on top, I think.
Yeah.
Phil put some really good stuff out there. And I've been watching this Patriots team. Well, I equate them to, and I try to say this with all due respect, to the Gary Payton Sonics teams. And I'll say it like this, where you win 60 games in the regular season, but you don't have a style, sometimes that gets you in trouble in the playoffs. And they're going to dominate, and the reason I'm going to say it like this, they're going to dominate 80% of the teams in the league with their style. But when they get into those championship-type games, and they're always going to be in those games. So people argue, like, well, it was one play that they lost or this and that, they'll get it down to a play, but it's still those plays. And if you think about the teams who have beaten them, but this is true about the teams who end up in those final games. It's the teams that can play them physically on offense and take away Brady's ability to get those quick passes and to get in those scenes. Teams that can get up and knock around. And those teams are still going to be there. They're going to grow next year. And so the teams that were giving him problems is when they – I remember Pittsburgh went to that bump-and-run physical play at the line of scrimmage because they don't have anybody who can go over the top. So offensively, they're going to have to do one or two things. They're either going to have to really begin to invest in those young running backs. And so is Brady moving into that kind of Elway era where the running game sets up the passing game in a way that allows for them to get downfield? That's one thing they're going to do. Or they're going to have to find them a young guy who can go over the top, who can stretch in their draft, who can stretch the field a little bit, because they don't have anybody who can run away from it more. So that's offensively. They got to do it. The other thing is, and I think this is what I said when we did draft, and I said what I loved about what Belichick did, is the people he invested in defensively. His defense this year, you can see, is kind of going back to its old Belichick defense. If you notice, you know, they had some injuries in this game, but the direction of this team and how he invested in the draft, when you start seeing guys like Upshaw and some of these guys play and he continues to invest, if they win, they're going to look a lot like the team that Tom started with when he started his career. That's what – if they can get something like that with the Dillon running game, that type of team is the kind of team that will help them win going forward.
Okay. Consider that broken down. So that's where the Patriots need to go to get their act together and get themselves back in that situation where they can be a true contender and not a pretender, which I think is what my man D. Wills just broke down. Now, talking about pretenders, Chip Kelly going to the Eagles. This is a team that was a pretender this season. Came in with a lot of hooping and hollering about, you know, Super Bowls, this Super Bowl, that, and they didn't get close to a Super Bowl. Didn't even make the playoffs. Andy Reid got fired. Chip Kelly's on deck now. After what seemed to be him saying that he wasn't going. But now he is going to Philly. PhD, what do you think of the Chip Kelly hire for the Eagles? Is he going to be successful in the NFL?
Chip Kelly got everybody to go for the okey-doke. He did.
Go get him, PhD.
He turned down a job, you know, and quietly started working behind the scenes. After ESPN left his front yard, he started quietly going behind the scenes. So, honestly, you know, we see this in college basketball where you have these college coaches that are building empires. They have control. They are in charge. They're getting paid like professionals. You know, your Izzos, your Krzyzewskis. And I always have a problem with saying Coach K's name, so I always say Coach K. And so those two guys specifically have had the NBA knocking on their door, and they have flirted, they have went out on dates, but they have not crossed the line. And this pattern of we're seeing college coaches coming in and being successful, but Jim Harbaugh, in my opinion, was a professional guy.
Yeah.
You know, from his NFL days as a player, his short time as an assistant, he was in college football for a relatively small amount of time when you compare that to his professional football career. And that's why I think that he's been so successful, in addition that he's a great coach. Now, we see the motto of a lot of college coaches trying to make the jump to the NFL being unsuccessful. Well, what about Pete Carroll, the peanut gallery says? Well, this is Pete Carroll's second or third time around being a professional football coach. It's my concern that guys like this, like Chip Kelly, man, he's like a king out there in Oregon. You know, he has built a program that had mild success for the guy that he coached before there when they had Harrington, but he's taken them to a new level. And sometimes I wonder why coaches just don't stay in the college game. So personally, I think it's a mistake because the offense that he's bringing in, and perhaps he doesn't stick with that as much, I just don't see it translating long-term to the NFL. You know, you can't have four-star recruits on your bench at quarterback. If one gets hurt, you plug somebody in. It's not a video game. You got salary cap. You got all these other issues where you just can't plug somebody in and be successful. We've seen quarterbacks that are running the system in the NFL. I mean, injuries is something that's going to happen. So I'm not convinced that his stint in Philadelphia is going to be overly successful, and I think he should have stayed in Oregon.
Yeah, I think the reason that college football coaches traditionally aren't successful in the pros is because in college you get to buy your ingredients. And not only do you get to buy your ingredients, if you're at one of the top programs, you can go in and get three or four of the best brand of ingredients you can get off the shelf at once. You can get three or four packages of, you know, the best steak and put it in your cart. And you can have steak one night, great steak the next night, and great steak the next night. And you can't do that in the pros. And I think that's where college coaches get into trouble a little bit, is not understanding that in the pros you're not just gonna have more talent than the other team. I think that's where college coaches get caught up a little bit, is that, you know, your third and fourth best are not just naturally going to be better than the other team's third and fourth best. Whereas if you're at Oregon, most weeks you're going against a team where your second and third string is better than some of their first string players. Same thing with Nick Saban at Alabama, which is why I don't think he worked out well in the pros, is because you can't just have more talent than other folks to be successful. And I think in college football, it's a system that isn't designed for parity. The NFL is set up for parity. And so when you talk about player selection and player acquisition, and when you have a distinct system like a Chip Kelly does, a certain type of style that you want to run and that you want to implement, you have to have certain kind of personnel. And there's no guarantee you're going to get that personnel before you get fired. I mean, NFL not stands for not for long when it comes to coaches. And so if you're not able to acquire the kind of talent that you need to run your system right away, you're going to find yourself in a situation where by the time you do get that talent, it may be too late. Now, he's going to the Eagles. They have some great talent at receiver. I think they have a running back that fits his system. I think right now they have to figure out what it is that they're going to do at quarterback. I think Mike Vick fits the system very well. I don't know if he fits the system at that price. I don't know how much. I know he do a heck of a lot of money.
$15 million
that
year.
Yeah, so that's a lot of money. So I don't. I'm with you. I think I'm not sold on Chip Kelly working out as a pro. I'm gonna have to see it to believe it. You know, he reminds me of Spurrier back when Spurrier first came back to the NFL from Florida.
Yeah,
when he left Florida and came to the league, he had the fun and gun. He had, you know, he was throwing the ball around. They going scoring 56 points a game, blowing people out. But never did he put a quarterback into the league. You know, Brady never put a competent quarterback into the league. From your Danny Werfels, Shane Matthews's, those kind of cats that came through Florida, and even the receivers that he had drafted, none of those guys ever really panned out. So he wasn't necessarily developing guys and teaching guys skills that they would need at the next level. If you can't get a college kid ready for the pros, how are you going to get a pro ready to compete against other pros? If you can't get a college kid ready for the pros when he's competing against mostly people that aren't going to be in the pros, how are you going to get a pro ready to go against other pros? So I think, again, not saying that he will fail, but I'm not buying the success. I'm not in the Chip Kelly boat yet. I'm gonna have to see it to believe it. So that's kind of where I stand on Chip Kelly going to the Philadelphia Eagles.
You missed my Spurrier impression. Yep, click clack.
There you go. I did miss that. I didn't catch that. I was a little slow on the take.
I want to add that I think that Chip Kelly is he's a great coach. And when I say opportunist, we could say all coaches are opportunists. But the way in which he even positioned himself for Oregon made you understand he wasn't long for that. And where I see this move is he always knows he has the ability to go back to a big-time job in college football. Because in the college world, a whole bunch of people are going to take him. But I think this is fool's gold. I think this is NFL football's version of hiring, I'm calling him Antony, not D'Antoni, because the D is silent, like Django.
Nice.
It's Django.
I think this is fool's gold because for all the reasons you just said, I just don't think if he can pull it like kind of how they're doing with Kaepernick, then I think there's some possibilities. But again, you got to have the right person to run that. And now you got a young quarterback there who's a decent quarterback you can't use. And so this is not really about Kelly. This is, to me, about Philadelphia management. And I put it on them, like, where are they going with this? What's their vision? And one of the things I worry about with organizations, when you don't really kind of understand, like, what are they trying to do? Who are they? And
the
I don't
Lakers.
Know who Philly is.
The Lakers.
Right. And I don't know who Philly is. Not just really about Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly going to do his thing and still land on his feet. If he loses, he's still going to land on his feet. If you him, this is like get paid. If I succeed, then I'm going to get paid more here. If I don't, I'm going to go back to college football, kind of like what happened with Saban, maybe get in a better situation, and maybe win a national championship. Because he could do what he did at Oregon over again anywhere else. So, you know, for him, it's a great play. For Philly, I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. Again, I'm not college coaches to the NFL. In my lifetime, this has never really worked. So we'll see how that all plays out. I want to transition to the five on the black-hand side. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. I'm going to hit them with it like this.
Five on the black-hand side.
All right, this edition of the five on the black-hand side. We talking NBA All-Star, all right? The break is coming up. The All-Star starters have been announced. Now we're just waiting on them to announce the reserve. So I got a couple questions for the guys in this five on the black-hand side. We're going to take you through them real quick. Question number one, are you good with the starters? Now, for the Eastern Conference, the All-Star starters are, let me just pull it up real quick.
LeBron, Carmelo, D-Wade, Rondo, and Garnett in the East. In the West, Kobe, Durant, CP3, D-12, and Blake.
All right. There we go. So, PAD, you all right with that?
No. So, in the East, I have a problem, and this is so difficult to say. KG is a guy I'm not good with, and I'm a big KG fan. I'm a KG apologist. I think Varejao for Cleveland should be in that slot. Even though he's been injured, he has played, I believe, 25, 28 games. And again, when you think about it, the All-Stars are announced after game 41, so he's played enough to be announced as a starter. I understand why he wasn't voted in, because the fans are still a Garnett heavy, but I like Varejao. At the time he got injured, he was getting 14-14, and I think he was just dominant in that front court position. In the West, I like now if the rules were different and we didn't have to go with three front court players, I would go with James Harden over Griffin.
I really think
Harden is playing well enough that he's really pushing CP3 for that backcourt position, but I like what CP3 has brought to the table, even though his numbers are down a little bit because his minutes are down, but I think that should not overshadow the impact that CP3 has had. So if I was able to have some flexibility with the front court and we just went with the best five players, I would go Harden over Blake Griffin.
Okay. I'd ask you the question, why Blake over D-12?
Well, I think D-12 has brought enough to the table. Even though he's not playing to his normal D-12 level, I still think he's playing better than Griffin in terms of how he's able to impact the game. I mean, if you look at D-12's numbers, they're pretty comparable to Griffin. You know, they're both poor free throw shooters, but I think the reason D-12 would get the nod for me over Griffin is because of how D-12 controls the game defensively. Now, he hasn't been controlling like he has in the past, but he's still the strongest defensive force we have in the league.
Okay. D-Wills, how do you feel about the All-Star starters in the East and the West?
At first, I was going to say, I don't have a problem with all this. And I would say the Garnett one sticks out a little bit because I think there's some other places you could go with some players. I think the Varejao comment might have been good there. I think that one, the Garnett one sticks out, but I think that's more for – you know, what he's done historically to put him out there. When you think about, you know, how people like Horford and some of these guys have been playing, I think in terms of some of the stats that they're putting up and what they might be doing and some other folks, I think you can make something for Garnett. But he's got that. At first I was looking at Wade and I had run some numbers on some things and you know, he's got about a year or two to go before he starts to come into question on that starting roster, but he's getting close. And then the West, I think we looked at Griff. I think that was a problem. When you think about people like, you know, Zach Randolph and some of these cats, when you think about double-doubles, Zach Randolph is leading in double-doubles. David Lee. You think about what's happening. And I called the Golden State one. Go back, check the record. And Coach of the Year. I think I called that one with Jackson. Well, I digress. But when you think about the double-doubles, Zach Randolph and what they're doing, and he's leading double-doubles with David Lee at second in terms of what they're doing with their teams. And you think about the talent that the Clippers have. Those are two guys that I think should have given consideration. When you look at double-doubles for power forwards, you got Zach, David Lee, Tim Duncan, Aldridge, and then Blake is sitting at five.
Okay.
But I do like what Phil T said about the West as well. If you could be a little bit creative.
So, give me a reserve. Somebody that has to be a reserve, in your opinion, D. Wills.
I mean, if we're looking at reserves, I mean, I think I named a couple here. Someone like Zach Randolph, David Lee kind of guys like that. Looking at what their teams are doing, they need to be reserves.
Okay. PhD, give me some guys
where I know PhD is going to go, but those two are different.
Okay. PhD, who do you got that has to be a reserve?
Kyrie Irving.
No Cleveland bias?
Nope.
Okay. All right. A guy that I think definitely needs to be a reserve is Joakim Noah. And I actually would tout him as a replacement for KG. The kid is playing great basketball right now.
Yes.
He's kind of anchoring that Chicago team, kind of helping them weather the storm. He's giving you 12, 10, two blocks a night. On top of that, he's giving you right now he's giving you four assists a game from the center spot. Shooting a good percentage from the free throw line. His field goal percentage could be a little bit better. And he's playing 38 minutes a night as a big man. That is a heck of a lot of run for a big dude. But he's playing great D. He's getting a steal a night, two blocks. I mean, I put him in that top spot. Of course, with the voting and the fan voting, fans aren't going to vote a guy like that in. But he's having a great start to the season. He's had a great first half. And he's really holding down that organization while they wait for Derrick Rose to get right. So that's one guy that I have to have as a reserve. PhD, give me a guy you feel like is most likely to get snubbed. He's deserving, but because of where he plays or because of his position, this cat is probably going to be left out in the cold this year.
I think Steph Curry. Steph Curry is playing at all-star level. He's remained healthy. I think because the point guard position is so deep in the league right now, he's going to get overshadowed a little bit. So I think Steph Curry is a guy that should be on the team, but he may get snubbed.
Okay. D. Wills, what about you?
Wow. This is hard to even think about. I think that I'm looking at the big power forwards, and I put the list together. There's a lot of them there. I think the guy gets left off just because of the way it's set up right now is David Lee. So I think Golden State in the way.
So both the Golden State guys get snubbed.
I think they get snubbed. I mean, I just think that those two places where you have, I mean, you watch them. I love them, but it's one of those things where, it's like the Grammy. Your album did well. You're not going to get any love this time. It's the next time around. And I just think they're going to struggle. I love the way he plays, but when I look at that, I look at the way those things are set up, you got to go with Zach, right? You got to give him some love. And we're not going center power forward, so you start adding those other pieces in. It becomes a little harder to look at. You got Marc Gasol there, right? So you eliminate kind of the center power forward kind of thing. I think it's one of these power forwards that's going to be left out in the West.
Okay. Okay. A guy I think is going to get left out is Drew Holiday from Philly. They're not playing great right now. I think Deron Williams, I think when you look at those backup guard spots in the East, I think you're looking at Kyrie and Deron Williams slipping in. And I think Deron Williams slips in because of his rep more than anything and his team success. His team is doing much better now. His team is playing well. And he still is a big part of that. Whereas the Sixers right now are not in the playoffs, if the playoffs were to start today. The team is struggling. Drew Holiday ain't struggling, though. The team is struggling, but Drew Holiday's playing some very good ball. But I think because of his team's record, I think because of his age, I think he may get left out in the cold, even though I think he's very much deserving. He's having a banner year. He's having a breakout year. He's almost averaging 20-10 as a point guard, which is excellent. So he's having one of those years. But I think he may get left out in the cold for a vet like Deron Williams, who has an all-star pedigree and whose team is performing at a higher level than his.
Gary Chase, I've got to tell you this, man. So I was looking at this today on the way home, as I was prepping for this, and I ran some numbers for the starters. And as I was pausing when you asked the question, I was like, where did I put that information? But that was the one that came up that said Holiday going to get snuffed. And for the exact reason you said it, when I sat there and looked at the numbers, and I looked at – because I was researching Rondo because, you know, a lot of people get critical of Rondo, you know, in a lot of different ways. You know, if Justin was on here, the first person he probably would have said was Rondo. And so I was building the argument for Rondo, and then I looked and I said, well, Holiday going to get lost in this. As part of it. So I was looking back, I was trying to, as you were asking the question, I was like, I had somebody I was looking at earlier today, but I think you're right. I think this is a kid that is going to get lost in the mix. And it's going to be sad my feeling is that the team might have a better second half, and all that's going to go for naught.
Yeah, because right now they're still waiting on Andrew Bynum's needs to regenerate.
His wig is not growing.
Does Tim Duncan make the All Star team? He's averaging 18-10.
That's why I say
he has to.
That's why I say that, you know, that Lee gets snubbed. I mean, Lee has been playing well. He's been doing things. But when you look at that, you look at the guys who are leading with the double-doubles and those things and the production, you know, Duncan is right there.
Yeah. And Duncan's made it in previous years with lesser numbers, 12 or 13 a game he's made it. So I think
and
he's going to merit his pick.
And the game's in Texas. So, you know what I mean? I think if Duncan is going towards the end of his road, and who knows if he'll have another all-star year in him, if they can get him in the all-star game in Texas, in the home state, I think they'll do that. You know, I think he'll get in. Because it is a showcase more than anything. Yes, it's a merit-based process, but it is a showcase, and it is like Black Woodstock. If you haven't been to an NBA weekend, you know what I'm talking about.
It's a killer. It's a killer. In the early days in Minneapolis, was there. Shout out to Tretch. Everybody.
D-Will's taking it back to 91.
Right. With the padlock cane around your neck.
Yeah. Shout out to Allen Houston. You know, all the fellas up in there. Dikembe Mutombo. Yeah, who's in the house?
Oh, you was hanging with Dikembe.
Yeah, he was up in there. Yeah, I can tell you a story about that.
Did you understand anything he said? Did you understand him at all?
Well, the funniest thing, I was up there with a good friend, and they had this big event in Prince's Club. And Dikembe was standing there. He's a big guy. And this woman pinched his fine. And she walked away giggling. And he turned around, looked at my buddy, thought he did it. And in a deep voice, said a word that I can't repeat on the air right now. But I damn near fell out. The look he gave him, and only the Kimbe voice. And he just sitting there with his drink, looking up at the Kimbe, looked at me like I didn't do anything. But yeah, that was the way in which I saw.
Man, you got cussed. You got cussed by young Dikembe.
What?
Oh, man. That's got to be crazy, man.
Yeah, a little crazy up there. But I loved it. I loved it. But, yeah, you're right. All-Star Weekend is off the hook. It is the Black
League. Yeah. Yeah. So who you got? Who you got for your first half MVP, D. Wills?
Man, Looking at how everything is going, the way Chris Paul is leading the Clippers and the way that they're playing, I still got some issues with whether or not that can win in the playoffs. But just his leadership and how he's got them playing in a way where they're very deep and got them playing together. I like Chris Paul numbers. And then, you know, he might be coming back. He coming back again is just LeBron in the way in which he's just playing. But I like Chris Paul.
Okay. PhD, first half MVP.
26 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists. LeBron James, period.
Mm. I'm going to have to go off the board. I love the CP3 pick. I have to go with I have to throw some love to Kevin Durant. Leading the team with the best record in the NBA. They haven't missed a beat despite losing one of the top 3 shooting guards in the league and one of the top 25 players in the league off their roster in James Harden.
Right, had to drop it in. You had to drop it in.
We're about to get a phone call.
Right.
They still have the best record in the NBA, and I think that is large in part due to Kevin Durant. And as you can see, he's working to really expand his game. He's rebounding more. He's trying to create for teammates more while still scoring at his usual clip, shooting great percentages, doing all the things that he does, and even trying to impact the game a little bit more defensively. So I would give that nod to KD for leading the number one team in the league at this particular point in time. Now, last question in the 5 on the black-hand side. Number 5, your breakout player, the cat that took that leap. We talked about guys who could possibly take that leap in our preseason NBA talk. Who has taken that leap this first half of the season? I'm going to throw mine out there first. And I'm probably taking yours, PhD, but I'm going to go ahead and do that. Kyrie Irving. Mm. Boy, the kid, man. Cleveland... If Dan Gilbert don't get this right, it's your own fault, dog. You got lucky, and you got 2 legit franchise players to come through there. And if you can't keep one, if you can't put a winner around one, then that's on you, man, because you got another one in Kyrie Irving. The kid's handle is off the hook. He's got that mentality of a winner. They aren't winning yet, but I think that's more due to the lack of talent around them. But I think if they put the right pieces in place, they have a cornerstone who can be a Derrick Rose, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Deron Williams, game-changing type point guard. He's pushing himself up into that conversation. He surpassed some other young guys who looked like they had dibs in the John Walls, those kind of guys of the world. He's kind of passed them and pushed himself into that conversation as one of the best point guards in the league. PhD, who you got? Breakout player.
James Harden, 25 points a game. It was questioned if he would be able to put up star numbers when he was the focal point of the offense and the defense. And, you know.
Who questioned that? Who would ever question such a thing? I never questioned that.
The proof is in the foot.
PhD is taking these shots. He like a great boxer with a good jab.
Yeah,
he gonna hit you with the right hand. He gonna cut you with that jab.
That's right. It's somewhere Justin is sleeping. Justin is sleeping, and his ear is just just burning. But to his defense, I was also skeptical of Harden. I wasn't as skeptical, but I was skeptical. But obviously, the proof is in the pudding. I'm coming around to the other side. He's my halfway breakout player.
Okay. All right. D. Will, halfway breakout player.
He's the one, because we had so much of a discussion about him, and my criticism was, could you lead? And I had a criticism around because of the way he stepped back. Because I saw him play in college. He was a beast. But then he had come into this role in OK City. And he kind of just had gotten himself and been comfortable about just kind of being that third person, you know. And we're like, could he turn that on, you know, he'd be bound right for 72 games a year. Could he be that guy?
Right.
And I've just felt like he's exploded. He's causing people the game plan. He is by far the breakout in a way that I thought he could be good, but he has just really come on the scene like superstar level beyond what I thought he could be this quickly.
Okay. Now, what I want to do right now is I want to hit the fans off with the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week, and then we're going to finish the show out. We got about 10 minutes left, so let's be quick with our Dogs of the Week, and then we got to talk Lakers. We got to talk Lakers before we close it out. All right? Now, we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
Hey, D. Wills.
We need more dogs.
My dog of the week, and this is coming close to home, you know, and I was on the phone with my brother this morning talking to him about these two guys who he grew up with, are really good friends of his. And it's not really those two, but I'm going to say this: Jack Harbaugh is the dog of the week, because we have two Harbaughs coaching the Super Bowl, but who they are comes from, I would say, Mr. and Mrs. Harbaugh. But, you know, in terms of their coaching and what Jack Harbaugh is, he's the dog of the week. He is the root of what we see in San Francisco and what we see in Baltimore. If you hear them talk, both of them are still consult him in terms of what they do in coaching, and this is the product. And so my dog of the week is Jack Harbaugh.
All right. All right. PAG, my man.
We need more dogs.
Yeah, you know, Jack Harbaugh actually was the Western Michigan University coach in Kalamazoo when I was growing up there younger. But I'm going to stay with the Ravens, and I'm going to go with Ed Reed. Ed Reed's story, he's been in the league for a long time, but some people don't forget he was not on that 0-1 championship team. So this is his first trip to the Super Bowl, and his story has kind of got overshadowed with other great stories like the Harbaughs as well as Ray Lewis. So my dog of the week is Ed Reed. He made enough big plays.
Yeah, man. And for me, my dog of the week, this guy wasn't a huge part of the victory for his team, but just for him to have another shot at the championship, I just want to give him a shout out, and that's Randy Moss. You know, this quiet, you know, he kind of sneaking under the radar with an opportunity to get a ring. Another one of those stories is kind of not out there, but, you know, he's a legend, great player, Hall of Famer for sure, getting another opportunity to get a ring. He had one a couple years back with the Patriots that Eli messed up. Eli and David Tyree kind of ruined that one. Here's another shot for Randy, so hopefully, you know, he has an opportunity to get one. But shout out to Randy Moss for being in the situation.
Straight cash.
So,
straight cash, homie.
Yeah, straight cash, homie. Straight cash.
Throw the ball up, man.
Exactly. So we got the Resistance Digital Dog of the Week on tape, on deck. We're going to ride this Laker conversation out for a little bit. We're going to start it now. We'll break once the live show ends, and we'll pick it up, and we'll go a couple minutes if we need to. Lakers, PhD. Actually, I'm going to go to D. Wills. I know he's got some heat in the tank. What's wrong? What's not right? Yeah, what's going right, rather?
Because we know everything's going wrong. So you want me to go with it?
Go with it.
All right, man. Well, I already told you, it's Antoni. What's wrong? It starts upstairs. This is a byproduct of Jim Buss trying to prove something to his father and himself. He has not made a move that is a sound basketball move yet. And this is what you see on the floor. It's painful to watch. As much as I don't really like the Lakers, it hurts me when I talk to Laker fans. It hurts me when I'm on the phone with my brother at this point. I should be enjoying it, basking and glowing in it, but it's painful. It's painful. Because they always represented, whether you hated them or the Celtics, you knew who they were. And right now, you don't know anything. That is a mess. You cannot have Gasol coming off the bench, one of the best power forwards in the game, coming off the bench. I mean, I don't understand what's going on in L.A. No defense, no offense, no nothing. It just, I don't know where to start, but it all starts at the top. When you got Kurt Rambis and I coach for free, that's a problem. I know your money's tied up, but I need to save it. That is the problem. That's L.A. L.A. is a straight mess, and it's bad for basketball.
PhD, weigh in.
I pass.
Well, this is what I'll say on the situation. You're right. D'Antoni's a big piece of it, but it's upstairs. You know, they brought this guy in trying to prove a point. They brought this guy in when we all said it on air. I think this was one time when we were all in agreement. When they fired Mike Brown, the only logical thing you could done, they fired Mike Brown, the only logical thing they could have done was to bring in Phil. That was the only thing that made sense. That's the only thing that wasn't going to set this team back. Now I think they're at a point where not only – do they need to trade Powell? But I think they also might need to trade Dwight. And the reason I say that is because Dwight's going to leave, and you're not going to get anything for him. And you will have given up Andrew Bynum. And if you don't move Powell, you're not going to get pieces. You're not going to get – they have to take a moment and revamp their roster on the fly, because they had a team with a two-year window. By firing Mike Brown, you cut a year out of your two-year window, because you're only going to have Steve Nash for 2 years. And that's the one guy who seems to be Teflon Tony in this whole situation. Gasol's getting the blame. People throwing rocks at Dwight. You know, Kobe. But nobody's questioning Steve Nash. I've said this time and time again. Steve Nash is a system point guard, has been a system point guard. You see he's not putting up those crazy numbers now, and he has more weapons than he's ever had. But they're not fit for the system. So he's not putting up his numbers. He's not being an impactful player. That's all I'm saying, man, is that there's a lot of blame to go around. This is not one man's fault. The organization, the players, the coach, they all culpable. And they're going to get Justin's hair cut.
Hey, Justin. Hey, man.
Justin's going to be sporting. He's going to be sporting one of them Onyx Baldies.
You're going to be looking like the fourth member of Onyx at the end of the season. Man, you're listening to The Real Sports Guys. We're signing off. Make sure you check us out next week. We'll be back same time, same place, 8:30 Central Time, Blog Talk Radio. Have a good one. Be blessed. Take care of yours. Peace.